Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is Yana Shanaeus, Mike Gregg, and Emilio Donnell. This episode, we'll start the show by discussing how the season ended for Fulham, which was a loss at the Medeski Stadium in the playoff semifinal against Reading. After that, we're going to talk about the Fulham Supporters Trust dinner. Mike and Emilio were there, so they will fill us in. Lastly, we will be talking about the end of the season. We have several end-of-the-season topics which we'll be going through, which will include the player of the season. We'll give our thoughts on the player of the season. And also, the Fulham supporters have shared their views on that on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. I'll be reading those as well. We have much to get through. Before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, Mr. Mike Gregg, how you doing?
Yeah, hi, Russ. Yeah, doing well. Looking forward to talking about the season just gone and putting a line under it and moving forward into what hopefully will be a prosperous summer with lots of trading going on and hopefully all in our direction and not the big guys going the other way.
That's right. Good stuff there, Mike. Yanis, over to you. How are you doing, my friend?
Get out! Out! Get out! So, hey, Russ, not bad. I just sponsored a donkey. I want to send it off to Africa. I've given it a name, right? Okay. Its name's Chris Martin. And he's difficult to tame, this one. Doesn't listen to anybody. So we need a little bit more time. Absolutely great. Great to be back on the show again and talk all things Fulham Football Club.
I look forward to doing the show with you, my friend. Before we do anything, I have to welcome Emilio back to the show. Emilio, how you doing?
Hi there, guys. Hi there, Russ. Yeah, tired. Another long day. Long week at work seems to be a consistent theme at the moment. So, yeah, it's good to reflect on the last 7-8 months of football, which, in all honesty, was a very, very successful season, despite the fact we just missed the playoffs. But, yeah, looking forward to reflect. Looking forward to listening to what the other guys are saying. And also looking forward just for a couple of months break. You know, just nice to reflect, enjoy the summer. Starting to warm up in the UK. So, yeah, just be good to just to keep in touch with the football world for the next couple of months. But, yeah, it's just nice also to have a bit of a break. So, yeah, it seems weeks ago that the season ended. But, yeah, it was only 10 days ago. So, getting a slight withdrawal symptoms. But at the same time, I'm actually quite pleased I can actually focus on other things in the next 2 months.
I have been going through some withdrawals there, Emilio. So that's why I'm kind of glad we can do this show. But like you said, we are going into the summer, and I'm looking forward to that. This certainly will be plenty to talk about. But before we move on to the summer, we have many things we have to talk about with the season that just passed. And, Mike, I'm going to start with you with our look back at the second leg, the unfortunate loss for Fulham at the Medeski. You were there, so let's start with you. Just give me your overall view of this match that was 10 days ago.
Okay, let's switch the brain in gear and go back to an evening, which was was very disappointing. But, it was a game we should have got a goal and gone into at least into extra time. I mean, we started slowly. It was, quite cagey, but then I thought we got more and more into the game in the first half. I wasn't entirely happy with the team that was selected. Cabano started on the right and he hasn't really played on that side. So, I would have started Martin, but, we plugged away but they got the penalty and they started sitting back. We started taking complete control of the game, I thought, anyway, for the last 25 minutes, 20 minutes. And you can look back on, Piazon having a chance, Martin having a header, the save from McDonald, all these kind of things. So we deserved a goal. In reflection on the two games, we did so well to get to the playoffs. It was a bit of a damp squib, our performances those last 180 minutes. We showed at times how good we could be, but just not consistently. And you have to give Reading credit; they tactically they got it spot on, really.
They did. That's a good point, Mike. It's funny. It's hard to look back and you think about the things that Fulham did wrong, couldn't convert, like you said, the opportunities. And you forget that you're playing a team that actually tactically had a very good game plan against us, and it really played out for two matches, and you saw it in the last match.
Yeah, I mean, they did. They frustrated us first game, and you know, I could see what we were trying to do. I mean, I was lucky enough, you know, I was one of the 2,000, and I would say sat, we stood the whole game, and I was quite near the top. And I'm not sure if it came. I haven't watched the game again. I couldn't bring myself to do that. But being so high up, and seeing the whole pitch view, there were times in the first half when, you know, the Martin discussion about he's a focal point, or you have the three runners, if you like. The trouble was we turned almost into 4-6-0 at times. You know, they'd have the ball and there's no one going forward. So Aluko wouldn't make the runs into space, and Aiti wouldn't make the runs into space, and Cabano as well. And you just felt great players, you know, not great players, but very good players. But none of them are really a striker, and I think that was our downfall, certainly in that game. And while it's worked against the lesser sides, against a team like Reading, who, you know, they did finish above us, and they, you know, they are a tough team to play. You know, they handled that front line fairly well. They sat back and sat back and sat back, and we, you know, and we huffed and puffed, but you know, it wasn't enough in the end.
All right. Over to you, Giannis. Just your overall thoughts on how the season ended.
Well, as Mikey said, it was very disappointing. We came in with such a strong run coming into the playoffs, and it was almost like we ran out of steam against a team that frankly cured my insomnia. They were set up in the first leg to defend like lions and try and nick a goal, and they did that. But having said that, as you know, we did get off to a slow start in the second leg. But you know, once again, critical calls at critical times cost us. And it's one of those games where, you know, you look back and you go, oh, you know, if we had a different type of, I don't know, you and I talked about use of technology, for example, for the Kalas, for the penalty. You know, it's about getting the right call. And if that call is made, you've got a very, very different game. Overall disappointing, but very proud of the lads that they actually made it that far.
I'm very proud of them too, Giannis. And listen, they exceeded many supporters' expectations. We did a show back in August, and I believe three of you actually predicted, I want to say 10th, 9th, and 8th. I predicted 5th, but you guys all know that I'm the ultimate optimist. But, you know, I think they exceeded many people's expectations, and they should be proud of what they did. Unfortunately, the season ended badly. Okay, Emilio, over to you. Your thoughts on how the season ended?
Yeah, a bit like a damp squid, really. I think that's the key thing. I think, you know, it's all that hard work. I think Giannis hit the nail on, you know, hit the mark there. We ran out of steam. I think over the two games, did we really do enough to win? Obviously, you've got to win your home games. And I think the Luko miss in the first game, had that gone in, things might have been a lot different. Certainly that first leg at home, and we might have seen a different outcome. And that would have resulted in a different formation away from home. I think, Mike made some very good points. And I think we missed the big game player, you know, the people you'd expect to step up to the mark and take control in this big game. And these are one-off games. So the fact that you beat Reading at home 5-0 means nothing over 46 games. Two games, it's like two cup finals in over 3 days. So, you know, the players you'd expect to make their mark, to Tom Kearney's, Aiete's, they just didn't really turn up on both legs collectively. I think everyone was fairly disappointed. We had enough in the tank to win the game. We didn't really convert our chances. Possession is high as usual, but I just thought we just didn't quite have enough quality at the end of the day. And the fact that the third best team, you know, resulted in getting to Wembley, then overall, we'd, you know, finishing sixth and not qualifying, you wouldn't be that disappointed. Reading deserved to go through. They won the game tactically over two legs. And, you know, I wish them all the worst of luck on Monday. I hope Huddersfield do them over. But at the end of the day, it just felt, if you look at the effect on the season, if the teams come with a plan to frustrate, to waste time, to feign injury, Sheffield Wednesday did that at Craven Cottage before Christmas last year. We need to overcome that in the summer. We need to see how do we play more often badly and still win? How can we start to play ugly and win? And
that's a great point.
There's some areas of reinforcement, but overall, I just thought Reading knew how to win ugly and had a game plan, like Mike said, and I don't think we can complain about the result. At the end of the day, I think they probably edged it over two legs.
Well, they did what they had to do, like you said, Emilio, win ugly. And I think we did that at times. I think we learned a little bit how to do that, but a team like Reading has been doing it all season long. And when you're in a situation, like you said, two legs, where the margins are so slim, it's the team that knows how to win ugly that can win. And if you look at who's going through, you have Huddersfield Town beating Sheffield Wednesday on the slimmest of margins as well. So it really is a fine line. And they know how to win those matches, and they've found a way. So I'm glad that Mike started the show by giving them credit, because you have to give Reading credit. They know how to win those matches, and they're in the final, and that's partially why they're there. All right, guys, let's move on. And, Mike, I'm now going to talk to you a little bit. You were at the Medeski. So let's talk a little bit about the first half. I just jotted down some of the key moments, and then you can share your thoughts on them. Let's start off the bat. You know, you have Reading having a very good opportunity in the 13th minute, and want to give Marcus Bettinelli credit. I thought he made a great save on the shot by Jan Kermagant. Then you have some opportunities from Fulham in the 18th minute. You have the shot by Ryan Fredericks, a nice shot, a nice save by Ali Alhabzi. Then you have what happened in the 28th minute. I thought this was a golden opportunity. Unfortunately, Fulham could not convert. You have the free kick from Tom Kearney, and Alhabzi makes the save. But the rebound does get to Sonny Lucco, and his shot, again, is saved by Ali Alhabzi, who came up big this entire match. So, Mike, I want to get your view of the first half and maybe talk a little bit about these moments I just shared.
Well, I mean, I go back to what I said. I thought they started well. I mean, their crowd was quite supportive of them. We were trying our best, but, you know, stuck in a corner. But, no, I thought we did start slowly. But, you know, we did have chances. You know, Kearney's free kick was a very good chance. And the follow-up, you know, their keeper did well to stop it. And, you know, we got more and more into the game. But I did feel we were stretched a little bit at times. And it shouldn't be ignored that I thought Ream was excellent in the first half. I mean, Callis put a very bad pass to him that almost, you know, there was a stage there in the first half where we must have given the ball away about three or four times by cross-field passes. You know, Malone made a mistake. Callis made a mistake as well. I think McDonald maybe. But it seemed to always be Ream who was cleaning up. But yeah, they seemed more dangerous coming forward against us, and we never really created enough chances. And Kearney's free kick was the best chance. But you know, it was a fair half, 0-0 at half time. But it was certainly on a knife edge, that's for sure.
Right. And Mike, I'm going to go right back to you, because it felt a little bit, watching back and obviously listening to it and then watching it as well. I was doing a little bit of everything with this, but I was watching it live. And the one thing that stood out to me at the half, I thought, oh, this is deja vu. This is what happened in the first leg. Did it feel like that to you at halftime? It's like, oh, here we go again?
No, it didn't feel like that, but you did. It's a cliche, but it was a case of, you know, it's going to be one goal in it, or certainly, you know, certainly the first one to score is going to win this game. And I felt if we could have got the first goal, we would have gone on to win, you know, quite easily, I think. But it was just so tense. I haven't been. I remember leading up to the first game, I wasn't really that nervous until, you know, kickoff, really. But it was a really, really tense first half. I think I tweeted something about, you know, how tense it was as well. But, you know, because this is it, you know, 46 games, 47 games and 48th game of our season. And it's coming down to, you know, this game. It's our cup final in some ways, you know, to get. It reminded me of the Hamburg game. I remember the last 20 minutes of that game shaking like anything. And there were times, you know, you're living every kick and every header, every mistake. I mean, the guy next to me I'd never met before, you know, grabbing each other because he's like, oh my God, you know. But, I don't know what it was like. If I'd been at home watching it, I would have had to have left the room at times, I think. I really do. But it was like that. It wasn't deja vu. It was just, God, this is tense. you know, and you know, it's going to be one goal, and we're going to talk about it, you know, but you know, unfortunately, it came very early in the second half.
Yes, we're going to be getting that in just a second, but I want to go to Giannis. Giannis, do you agree with Mike? Do you feel that tense feeling he felt? I know he's right there, but you're watching it. What was going through your mind at halftime?
Same thing. Same thing. I mean, you know, I've lived it on the terraces watching the lads play, and it's like you're in a different world altogether. It becomes, and he's right, you live every kick, every header, every foul, every whistle, and it's so uncertain. But you know, that after the disappointment was over, I thought to myself, well, you know, third of the way through the season, if you told me we'd be, you know, we'd even be discussing this, I might have laughed. But it's great that we got ourselves into position to be going to a team like Reading and being, you know, being nervous, and or being 3,000 miles away and being nervous. And it was, to me, I think it was one of those games where, you know, I'd mocked Al Habsi in the first leg and called him Al Dropsy.
You did.
But Al Dropsy became Al Habsi again.
He stood up.
He did, and you make some critical saves, but I actually think there's such a thing as good defeats, and I think that the fact that really a penalty kick did us in with the players that we've got is going to be good for Slava, because he will have taken a lot away from the game in terms of what we need to do to take next level, because he's not going to be looking at playoffs next year. He's going to want us finishing top two, if not winning the division.
Well, I agree with
you. So, good lessons to be learned. But it was a very, very nervy, very, very, very nervy game, for sure.
Absolutely. And, Emilio, before we go to the second half, I want your thoughts on what Giannis and Mike both shared here, because I can tell you, watching it, I was really tense. I've watched several, I guess you could say, tense games with the New England Patriots. I'm glad that Mike brought up the Hamburg match. I remember just watching that and the tense feeling of that Hamburg match. I want to get your thoughts on the fact that it was so tight that it was really going to be that one goal. What are your thoughts about what the guy shared here going into the second half?
Yeah, I think take on board everything the guys have said. And, you know, in terms of the gut feeling, it was never going to be. I don't know. It's one of those feelings where, yes, we did well to get into the playoffs. We earned that right through the good end of the season. But am I despondent? Am I disappointed? No, I'm not. I actually taken a lot of courage. We can cover it later. But I'm seeing all the positives of that good end of season run. Last 6 months in particular, we were probably the best team in the division.
Yep.
You know, we've got a lot to look forward to. I think, was there that concern if you get promoted with a squad that isn't strong enough? What is there more likely that you'll go down? I think actually we can strengthen, push to get automatic promotion and actually retain Premier League survival the following season. So I'm actually taking a lot more courage. I don't think I was as nervous as a Hamburg game. No, nowhere near that, to be honest. And then because I probably was a little bit more relaxed that if we didn't win outright, then it wasn't going to be the end of the world. I think there's a lot of positives to come out of that. But Giannis made a point about Al Habsi. I'm always being quite scathing of him. He can either be excellent or appalling. And I don't think we did enough in the first leg to test him. The one opportunity that we tested him, he screwed up and we scored an equaliser. And unfortunately, in the away leg, he was their man of the match. He kept them in the game. So, overall, just not good enough. So, decisions didn't necessarily go our way over the two games. But, you know, I'm a believer that things even themselves out over the course of the season. Some you win, some you lose. But overall, first half was cagey, a bit like the Huddersfield away game, you know, a few weeks ago, where we started off very slowly and it felt the same again. But we sort of started to take control, and when you get those chances or half chances of better finishers in the team, we would have won that game, to Mike's point. And it's those fine margins, that bit of quality that we were lacking. We've got very similar good players, but when the big players are required to step up and make that difference, we just didn't quite have enough in the tank. Maybe that's where we need to reinforce in the summer. So overall, first half was cagey. Maybe we finished on top and we've got to take those chances. And that's a problem. I think that in those key games, we didn't take the chances. And here we are talking about a defeat as opposed to looking forward to Monday's final at Wembley.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I was hoping to be on a plane, guys. I was hoping to be meeting you, Mike, and Emilio, and maybe you would be over there too, Giannis, but unfortunately it did not happen. All right, it's time now to look at the second half, and Mike, I definitely want you to share your thoughts on it. I'll just talk about the key moments, and we'll go through all of the key moments in the second half, but then we're going to obviously concentrate on what happened the first thing I'm about to mention. We're going to go back to that because I want to concentrate on that. Let's start with the moment of the match in the 49th minute. A penalty is given for a handball on Tomas Kalas, and we'll get back to that in a little bit. Then right afterwards, you have Jan Kermigan takes the penalty and scores and gives them the lead. And then soon afterwards, not long afterwards, they had a wonderful opportunity to make it 2-0. Jonathan Swift's shot, fortunately, goes right to Marcus Bettinelli. They actually should have been up 2-0 at this point. But the match was still at 1-0 at this point. Then we're going to talk about several opportunities from Fulham, some really good chances here. And let's start with a really good chance by Lucas Paez. And that's followed up by the opportunity from Kevin McDonald. His shot looked like he was going to get the equalizer, but it was again saved by Ali Al-Habsi, who was definitely their man of the match. And then at the very end of the match, you have the header from Chris Martin from across by Stefan Johansson that just goes wide. And that's how the match ended. And there were other opportunities during the match as well. I also want to mention that I've watched this several times and definitely want your thoughts on this, Mike, in a little bit after we talk about the situation in the 49th minute. But the situation with Lucas Paez on, you know, again, he was in the box. Was this a penalty? You know, he goes down in the box. Was this a penalty? I want to talk about that as well. But let's start. Let's go right to the 49th minute, Mike. Let's talk about this situation from your view. What did you see here?
Well, it was at the far end, and there's always a slight delay. You look straight to see what the ref's doing, and you know, he points and gives it, and you couldn't tell really whether it was a penalty from the, you know, from where we were standing. Looking on Twitter, even before the penalty was taken, people were saying, yeah, it was a penalty. So, yeah, disappointing because, you know, Palace we've seen give away, you know, a couple of other silly ones as well. But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, our season finishes on one of our weaknesses, really, you know. We failed to convert penalties, and then we've you know, we've basically lost the chance of getting of this game, you know, because of a penalty as well. So it's a bit of fate there, really, throughout the whole season. But yeah, so we're one down. We're early in, you know, we're early in the half. But as I said at the start of the show, you know, for pretty much the last half hour, we were the best team, and you know, we had chances, as I said, and Piazon, I didn't think it was a penalty, I have to be honest. I'd also think that some of our players were looking for things too much. You know, sometimes you felt, take him on, and looking for the easy option. And, you know, Fredericks, I think, fell into that trap in both games where you know, instead of actually being positive and taking the player on and getting in the box, he's looking for the foul all the time. And, you know, that I found that quite frustrating. But, you know, I don't want to dwell on that. You know, in the end, we tried our best, and Jokanović tried to change it up, and, you know, it almost worked. And but I have to admit, you know, you look at the clock, it's 50 minutes, we're one down, you think, well, we're plenty of time. Then it's 60 minutes. Then it's 75, and then you think, oh, God, we're running out of time. And of course, at the other end, you know, Reading had chances as well. So you know, but that's what happens when you're chasing the game like this. But, you know, we did our best, and it wasn't enough, and that's really it. And I know you want to talk about the penalties or the penalty, and was it, wasn't it, and, you know, technology, that kind of stuff. But you know, it's. I don't feel as if I was cheated. I saw lots of people say we were cheated over the two games. We had enough chances to score, and I've come away from games feeling really cheated. For this game, I didn't feel that way. I have to admit that.
I'm glad that you put that way, Mike, because we are going to talk again about the penalty in just a second. But like I said, I'm glad that you gave credit to Reading. We're talking about this because Emilio said it too. They did enough to win these two legs. They did what they had to do. And whatever we're going to talk about next with technology, my thoughts on that doesn't change that. They're at Wembley for a reason. They did enough. And that's the bottom line. So I don't want to take anything away from them getting to Wembley because, like you said, I'm glad that you said that you didn't feel cheated because I think they're going there for a reason. So good point by you. But let's now talk about this situation because I'm just going to ask you the question, then I'm going to ask the guys the same thing. You watch baseball. I watch American football and the NFL. There's replay there. And I just want to ask you this question because I know there are many people that like traditions of football, and there are probably some out there that don't like the fact that there's goal line technology there, but there's goal line technology. I'm just going to throw this out there, and I'll ask you first. Would you rather football stick with the traditions or get the call right, meaning use technology in certain situations that are match-changing situations like this one? So I want to get your thoughts on it, and then I'll ask the guys the same thing.
I'm not against technology being used for matter-of-fact decisions. So goal-line technology is a matter of fact. Was it a foul and is it a penalty? Is that a matter of fact? Is it a handball? Was it ball to hand, hand to ball? You can have, you know, 10 people in a room, and with some of those decisions, they're not going to agree, you know, because it's not a foul. It is a foul. It's not handball. It is handball. Even offsides, you know, sometimes they're, oh, you know, is it, isn't it? So I'm not against it, but it is a different game to the American games that you're talking about. You know, it is a free-flowing game. And, you know, how I'll ask a question, Russ. I haven't followed up the game, okay? And I've seen the picture of the hand, you know, of the hand on the ball through Callis's arm. When did that first appear?
When did the actual picture first appear?
Yeah.
I didn't see that picture until I saw tweeting or retweeting Tony Khan's tweet. That's when I first saw it. But I actually, I recorded the match. So I watched that back because I wanted to see it for myself, Mike. And I saw the same thing when I slowed it down. And I was able to see frame by frame and was able to see that situation. And the what I saw matched what was tweeted out, meaning that Kermigan hit the ball with his hand, and then it went on to Collis and hit Collis's arm. That's what I saw. And
other people, Fulham fans, have said that Callis was silly for putting his hand there, you know,
Okay.
I'm going to blame him for doing that. So I'm not against it. I'm not against it.
But it has to be conclusive. It has to be conclusive.
Exactly. And it has to be done in a reasonable amount of time.
Correct. As I agree with you.
You know, I think one of the issues with football is, and when you look at the stats, is it's a 90 minute game technically.
Right.
But actually, the ball is only in play 60 minutes. And so, you know, it's we're stopping a game again. I mean, there's lots of things we could talk about, rules of games, and I'd love to do a show on that. But, yeah, I'm not against technology, but for matter-of-fact decisions only. And handballs, I'm not so sure, are they?
Okay. But that's why I said it this way, Mike. It has to be conclusive. If it's not conclusive, you cannot change it. And the way that I would do it, if this was me in charge, I would, in the time that, say, a ref was going over to his linesman to ask his linesman his view of what had just happened, you can have someone watching a replay and be able to look fairly quickly, I think, within 30 seconds to a minute, the time that they would probably be conversing back and forth about the situation, being able to say, you know what? It's not conclusive. You can't change it. Or it's conclusive. You can change it. So that's just the way
I'm...
Yes.
But, so on handballs, yeah, and we've seen it, player is 3 yards away from a player and they fire the ball at them. And sometimes it hits their hand and you see a ref give a a penalty, and then you see other times when the ref doesn't give a penalty,
right?
And they discuss it in the box in the sky, you know, with the pundits before them, and two of them say, "Yeah, it was a penalty," and two of them say, "That is not a matter of fact. That is an opinion," and okay. That's where I have an issue with these kind of things.
Okay, the only, and I understand where you're going on it, Mike. The only reason why I was bringing this up is because you can see the ball being hit into his arm. So I see what you're saying, but this is cause and effect. This is something that's, I think, maybe just a little bit different because of what Kermigan did to cause it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I totally understand that. But you either, if you go down the route of having decisions on penalties, then you can't pick and choose. It will be a decision on every penalty decision. But then what do you do when a penalty isn't given?
Oh, I see what you're saying. The reverse.
Yeah.
If someone's complaining that it wasn't given, then you go through the same process, but it has to be conclusive, Mike.
But then you're talking about having a challenge.
Yes.
We don't have challenges. It's a bit, you know, I mean,
We could, Mike. That's what makes it interesting. I wanted to bring it up because I know it's controversial. Giannis, I'll go to you. I want to get your thoughts on this.
Well, the opinions on a final decision, hopefully, are based on the application of the rules that you've got. If you look at, I don't want to throw cold water on North American sports because they say, well, this is what happens over here. The premise over here in terms of, you know, whether it's hockey, baseball, basketball, as an example, is to get the right call. So I know, for example, was mentioned about the challenge. You know, for NFL coaches, they throw the challenge flag. Well, I don't. What's wrong with a coach questioning a decision and throwing a challenge flag? I don't. Because at the end of the day, you know, football's big business. This was obviously a critical game in terms of, you know, the ability to get promoted. Don't fans and players and clubs want the right call? At the end of the day, they want the right call. And instead of just, you know, us debating about whether that really should have been a penalty because of what Kermigan did, how about the fact that they look at what happened, they go through it frame by frame in real time? I don't think fans are going to ever give a bollocks if it takes an extra 5-10 minutes. You know, as long as they get the right call, and that's what you want, especially in a game as big as that, with a call as big as that, you want to make sure we don't look back and go, oh, you know what, if only. This eliminates that. For me, it eliminates that. For me, the opinion on whether things have happened or not are based on application of the rules. And if you have something like a challenge, I think it's great. I think because the thing it does have here in North America is it brings referees and umpires to account. Even cricket's got it. Cricket's had it, you know, cricket's had it for years. Why can we not catch up with this? There's no reason why we couldn't. Had they looked back on it, and I've looked at the same thing as you, Russ, to me, that's not a penalty. But in the end, whether it's my team or anyone else, I'm all about getting the call right. And if it means, you know, replay, going up to the booth, throwing challenge flags, so be it.
Okay, very good there, my friend. Melio, jump in here. Your thoughts on all this?
To be honest, I'm more leaning towards Mike. I think if there's anything that divides opinion, where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line about what's right and what's wrong? If you can't get a conclusive 10 yes, 0 no, you're always going to get that. It's always about opinion. I think that penalty decision will continue to divide opinion, whether you've seen the replay 100 times or not.
Okay.
I guarantee you're not going to get 100% equal mutual agreement on that decision, whether you replay it 10 weeks after the event. If we can't agree now whether it was a penalty or not, what's the likely that you get a mutual agreement 3 minutes after the incident? I just, you know, it's either conclusive or not. Tennis, for example, it's on the line or it's not on the line. It's in or it's out. Very simple. If we start giving, well, was it a penalty because of this scenario? Or wasn't it a penalty? Why was it given? Well, where do you draw the line about their first goal, Reading's first goal in the playoff at Craven Cottage? You could argue there was a foul leading up to their goal. So we're going to say, let's take the play back. Let's review that there was a foul previously. Therefore, their goal doesn't stand. It's where you start drawing the line. I think there's my view is, you know, some you win, some you don't. And if it starts to divide opinion, it's not mutual 100% agreement, sure, either for or against. You, other than you can start introducing that. You know, it just gets very complicated. You start to lose the luxury of the game, the flow of the game. And then every decision that will lead to a goal, you'll question, oh, hold on a second. The guy got his shirt pulled in the halfway line. Therefore, that should have been a foul. Goal doesn't stand. Where do you draw the line? Reading, okay, well, first goal at Craven Cottage. Let's look at it from that perspective. Should, sure, that goal have stood then? That's more conclusive that there was a foul than was it a penalty or not.
Okay. For me, guys, it's about being what Mike said. It has to be conclusive. If it's not conclusive, then forget about it. No call should be changed unless it's conclusive, like you said, Mike. 10 out of 10 agree. And if it's not 10 out of 10, then you go on and you don't change the call. It has to be 100% conclusive. So in certain cases, there would be that opportunity. But more often than not, Mike, it would probably not be overturned. But I'm just saying for that time that it is conclusive, I would want technology to help. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but then you're saying it in retrospect, really, aren't you? You're saying that everything that's proved right should be, you know, shows that we should use technology. But then you've still got to have the ones that aren't proven right as well. So that means you are going to be calling on things that, you know, just for the sake of it, you change the fundamentals at that level of the game. Of the time of the game, how long it runs, the flow of the game as well. And, you know, how many challenges do you have? And who makes the challenges? And, I see they're testing it in tournaments, they're testing, yep, it in leagues, and we will see it. But, it's a simple game, really. And, sure, overcomplicated by some stupid offside rules, but it's a very simple game, and you know, I think it's a big topic, I know, and I am torn a little bit in certain areas, but I'm going to stick to my guns and say, unless it's a matter of fact, all over line, that type of thing, then I'd rather we didn't go down that route.
Okay, so you want to stick with goal line technology, and I understand where you're going on that. For me, this is just me, because I've seen it work, and I see what you're saying, Mike. I would do one challenge a half. That's all I would do, and that's it. And if I didn't win the challenge, so be it. And I think you could do it fairly quickly, but it would have to be conclusive. It would have to be something that was obvious. And if it's not obvious, it's not conclusive, it's not changed. Simple as that, because then you are changing the game. It has to be 100%. You know, again, I'm bringing up the topic.
Yeah, it does get overlooked, and Emilio says it, you know, and it does get overlooked, which is the phase of the game. So, yes, a penalty is given, but hang on a minute. Let me rewind the tape to the corner we had, you know, 20 seconds ago at the other end of the pitch where my defender was pulled back, you know, and...
Oh, I know, Mike. That happens in hockey, believe it or not. Situations like that happen in hockey that will drive you crazy. I know what you're saying.
Exactly. So it's a real minefield. But,
I know.
There'll be a mess up by FIFA and UEFA. We know there will be. It'll be some fudge.
Again, I'm just bringing it up, Mike. I know that it's a controversial topic. But since it happened with Fulham, I thought this is an opportunity just to talk about it. I understand where you and Emilio are coming, and also Giannis. I'm just sharing my thoughts on it. This is just my thoughts. I see what you're saying, though. You know, you're concerned that it's an opinion, and if it's just if it's opinion, you can't change it. And I understand if it's for me, I want it to be conclusive. And if it's not conclusive, like you said, Mike, then I wouldn't want to give in. Honestly, I would want it to be 100% one way or the other way. All right. Enough of talking about technology. Let's move on from that. Let's talk about something better, guys. Let's move on from this match, and let's talk about the Fulham Supporters Trust Dinner. And Emilio, I'm going to start with you. You were at this dinner, and Mike as well. I definitely want both your thoughts on this, but I'm going to start with you. What did you take away from this dinner about 8 days ago?
Well, first and foremost, you know, I want to commend Mike and Dan Crawford for an excellent evening. It was excellently organized, good attendance, good people, good food, good everything. You know, I can't fault it. So Mike, you know, 10 out of 10 for organizing that on everyone on behalf of the supporters. So thank you very much for that. It was just a good opportunity to meet some key members of the club. You know, good to see Hugh Jennings talk very positively about the youth, the academy, you know, the long-term prospects of the club, the investment that's gone into the training ground recently. You know, we've got a bright academy and strengthening academy as well. So I was very heartened to listen to the Hugh Jennings being very bullish, very positive, very frank about the players, including obviously our Mr. Sessegnon as well. So, you know, it's good to hear that obviously that he's our future. We're doing everything we can to retain his services. And, you know, Hugh spoke very highly of both brothers, in fact. But generally, he's taken the club forward. He's got a very good, strong youth there. And, you know, the fact that we've got something to look forward to, I was very heartened by that. Tony Khan was, you know, as he was on the show a couple of months ago, very open, you know, was answering random questions from everyone around the table. Very positive, very bullish about the future, very certain that we'll retain some of our big players at the club. I think, you know, it's inevitable that we need to spend. And, you know, I don't see any challenge. I honestly see that we're going to, he's interested in taking the club forward. This is a business venture for him, but at the same time, it's a social pleasure as well. And he wants a club to get promoted to the Premier League. That was very evident. And for those who hadn't listened to the show 2 months ago, they saw for themselves that this is a guy who is here for the benefit for the future of the football club. And, you know, we haven't got a Blackburn Rovers owner or a Leyton Orient owner. We've actually got an owner who wants to take this club forward, and their number one objective is to get into the Premier League. So he was very open about the prospects of the summer and, you know, focus on the stats that we talked about 2 months ago. Again, he answered some good questions around that. And then we also looked at Alistair McIntosh. He talked very professionally. You know, he needs to be commended for keeping the club afloat, financially secure, and you know, he's given us confidence that actually there is going to be some money there for investment. And, you know, the three of them combined, you've got a good academy, Tony Khan looking after the day-to-day affairs, Alistair McIntosh looking after the accounts. I think we've actually got a good setup. I think everyone took positives from the dinner. You know, we all got to meet other colleagues of ours on Twitter. That was good to meet a lot of people there. And it was just a very enjoyable and, you know, I think it was a very successful evening. So overall, very pleased to attend. Thank you, Mike, for inviting me and others, and thank you for organising that. So I'd love to be part of the Fulham Supporters Trust going forward. That's something I'm speaking to Dan and Mike, so I'd like to sort of participate going forward in a bigger capacity. So so if they're willing to have me on board, then, you know, my services are at their disposal. So, it was a good night. And I'm even more positive than I was before. That's why I'm not over disappointed about getting knocked out against Reading, because I think we've got a bright future ahead of us, and maybe we can strengthen this summer, try to aim for automatic promotion next season, then it's more likely we can retain Premier League survival, like I said earlier. So overall, a very good night. So glad to be part of it.
Oh, that's great, my friend. I'm glad that you had such a good time. And Mike, I want to go to you. You should be commended, along, like you said, Dan Crawford and everyone that was involved with this dinner. You guys did a great job. I've heard from so many people about it, so I want to give you kudos and definitely talk about Dan. Dan is a friend, someone that I admire. He's a mentor to me. I mean, he is really like a teacher to me. He has taught me so much about Fulham, so I'm glad that he is doing such a great job with the Fulham Supporters Trust, along with you and everyone else. Talk about the dinner, my friend. It sounds like it was a huge success.
I'd like to thank Emilio for his kind words, and yourself there as well, Russ. It went really well. I mean, me and Dan organised it, and it was originally just going to be Hugh as the guest speaker, and I didn't know that Tony Khan was going to turn up until he sent me a message on Twitter on the evening of the Reading game, actually, about, you know, just after 12 o'clock, saying, I'll be there. And then Alistair McIntosh the next day as well said he would attend. They both did say that if we'd made it to Wembley, they wouldn't have been able to be there. But, you know, it was a nice surprise to have him. And, you know, like anything, I would have liked more people to be there. But actually, and I think Emilio agreed with it, we had a good bunch of fans there, and it was the right number for the three guests. And we must not forget Sean Davis was there as well, for them to talk to fans and work around the tables. If we'd had many more, they wouldn't have had that chance for interaction. And so that was really good. And there were some people on there who, and I think Emilio might be one of them, who wasn't, 100% sure on Tony and Alistair. But I'm lucky enough to have gone to the meetings every month, and I meet them all the time, and you get an insight into things, and you can only take people as you meet them. And I haven't had no problems with Alistair, apart from the FFP disagreement we had. I think, they're doing the job as well as they can. You can argue about some of the decisions they've made, but they were very open and honest, and some of the stuff we can't say, because it's all kept in-house. But I thought Hugh Jennings was very funny, but also, quite open on his role. And Tony Khan was, he would take questions all night. And in fact, he was probably,
that's great,
one of the last two people to leave the room. So, and then Alistair spoke well about the trust and the meetings we have. And I'll say it again, we are recognised by a parliament, a governmental report saying that Fulham and the Fulham Supporters Trust have the best relationship, or structured relationship, than any sets of fans or club within Britain. So, it was a really good night. And, we're going to wait for the fixtures to come out, and then we will book our evening next year and get the names in. And I suspect we will have a few more people next time. So, it was a really good night. And
that's great.
Yeah, Emilio's right. There were so many, putting so many names to Twitter handles. That was, Richard Bamber.
Can I name
a few? All that kind of
thing. Name a few, Mike? Laura Radford and her mother, Deborah.
Yeah.
Richard Bamber.
They were on our table. Yeah. And, it was a really, really good night. It was, and I've had so much good feedback, emails, messages, that kind of stuff. And hopefully we'll be able to run some events during the year and try and get back to what we used to do, which is, hopefully meet the manager or, that kind of evening. But try some other stuff at the club or maybe elsewhere. But, we've had good feedback, good membership uptake from it. And, it's going to roll on into next season.
That's great, Mike. Like I said, you, Dan, everyone deserves high praise for doing this. And you do a great job with the Fulham Supporters Trust. I'm now a member. I haven't got my card yet, but I'm a member. Dan has been asking me for years to become a member. I now have become a member, and I'm glad that I'm a member of the Fulham Supporters Trust. You guys do wonderful work, and I'm glad that so many people got to go to the dinner, and hopefully there'll be even more next year. All right, guys, let's end the show with end-of-the-season topics. I've got some very interesting ones. Let's start with player of the season. Giannis, I'm going to start with you. Before I go to you, though, and
yes,
get
sir.
Your player of the season, I'm going to read some player of the season reactions from some of the Fulham supporters. Let's start with Kenny Richardson. This was on the Cutters Talk Facebook page. I asked for their player of the season. He says Tom Kearney. Brendan Cronin says Tom Kearney. Leon Nembhard says Tom Kearney. Then we go on, Brendan O'Connor says Tom Kearney. So you have a lot of Tom Kearney, but then you go to Colm Forknoll. He says Stefan Johansson. Mia Cutler, Stefan Johansson. Steve Aldridge, caught between Tom Kearney and Kevin McDonald. Think on the balance, it has to go to Tom. Okay. Then we go to Stephen Fulham Wheatley. Tom Kearney for me. Chris Davidson, Stefan Johansson. Becca Williams, ain't nobody like Tom Kearney. Ian Walworth, Johansson. Gags Owen, not one player struggled. In my humble opinion, we have impact players on the bench worthy of, but Kearney scored key goals in tough matches. Love this squad, management, owner. Okay, and Joe Tivey, if I could, I would nominate our entire midfield, but if pressed, it would have to be Kearney. Okay, so many for Kearney, but there are some others chiming in with some other names. Giannis, player of the season.
How about Thanos Petsos?
I don't think he's going to make it, but go ahead.
No, I just, yeah, I'm just... No, it's got to be Kearney. I don't, although I did like the, I mean, I was critical of when we got Johansson, because Johansson, to me, I watched him a few games, and for Norway as well, he looked out of sorts, but he came into it. But Kearney has, to me, stepped it up a level this year. He's turned in from somebody who was maybe considered on the fringes of the Scottish squad now to someone who's probably going to play against England in the World Cup qualifier. He's been really a leader. He's been a talisman. And, you know, if we can keep him, assuming we can, we've got a tremendous midfielder to build around. But he had an outstanding year, and it seemed to go from strength to strength. To me, this is really a no-brainer. I mean, if Jazz Richards had been in the mix, I'd probably give it to Jazz. But it has to be Kearney.
Has to be Kearney. Okay, Kearney for you. Mike, to you.
I'm going to be a bit controversial, actually, and not pick Kearney. I'm going to go with Johansson, and I'll give you the reasons why.
Okay, go ahead.
Is that I felt, and when you look back on the fixtures and that kind of thing, and you look at his performances, when he played well, we played well. Kearney, some outstanding performances, some outstanding goals. Not quite dragging us, you know, to results maybe the way McCormick did a couple of times over the last, over previous two seasons. But for me, when Johansson played well, we played well. And, he started with that 30-minute cameo where he got subbed bit unfairly, I felt. Then missed a game or two, and then found his way in and hit form straight away. And, I'm a proud owner of the shirt he wore, with the poppy on as well. And, had a bit of a lull, around about March time. But, last few games he got back into it, and he was carrying an injury as well. But so for me, Johansson, someone who came in with fairly low expectations, exceeded himself in the middle third of the season, and then right at the end came back and was performing just as well.
Okay, excellent there. Emilio, player of the season for you.
I disagree. Again, it's one that divides opinion. I don't think it's that obvious. I think I think you mentioned him earlier as well. I had a debate with him at the home leg against Reading. I was very forthright. It was Steph Joe at all costs. He's played a few games, but I remember more games when Tom Kearney was not influential, not contributing, off colour, off form, than I did with Steph Joe. If that makes sense. So Kearney, you'll remember him for those magical moments, the Leeds equaliser, he's either very, very good or at times being actually quite average, where Stefan Johansson was consistently good. And I think over the fact that he's played, I think, 9-10 games fewer, only scored a couple of goals fewer, but his work rate, his passing, his vision. And Mike made a very good point. It's our form started improving when he started getting his stride around November, December time. His work rate, his passing, his goals, his assists, his work, running up and down the pitch, covering in defence. He's all over the place. And I just felt overall, he offered more consistently throughout those 37, 38 games compared to Tom Kearney, who had more off games than Steph Joe. So I think, yes, Kearney will be remembered because he's everyone's idol. Everyone loves him. We all love him. But at the end of the day, who would we miss more if we had a choice head to head? Maybe there's another question. If you had to make a choice, either or, who would you retain? I would say, in terms of work, I'd prefer Stefan Johansson, because I think he's got more flair, not one-footed as Tom Kearney is. And I think Stefan Johansson, maybe this is a controversial theory, but he will probably be more successful in the Premier League. Maybe I'm just throwing out, maybe I'm going to get a lot of abuse for this, but I just think Tom Kearney potentially would struggle in the Premier League, being one-footed. I think Stefan Johansson will offer a more dynamic style of football, which would suit some of the Premier League teams. So to me, I think it's a no-brainer for me, it's Stefan Johansson, but I won't also say who Tony Khan thinks his man, his player of the season was. I'll keep that private between me and Mike. But
okay.
At the end of the day, you know, okay. Johansson for me at all. You know, that's I think I was comfortable with that from the regular game at home.
Okay, guys, I have potentially a controversial pick here. I actually voted for this on the Fulham website. I'm going to go with Kevin McDonald. I think Kevin McDonald has been the player of the season. I don't think Fulham get to where they were without him. It seemed like he was playing every single minute of every match. Maybe he didn't, but he was pretty close. He was consistently there, protected the back four, made key passes. What stood out to me, Mike, I'll be curious your thoughts. I could go back to that match at Wolves at Molineux. That is the match that stood out for me with Kevin McDonald. And I just think he's someone that is so valuable. I could argue that he was the most valuable player, like I said, the player of the season last season. Mike, I want to get your thoughts on my pick. Am I crazy to pick Kevin McDonald?
No, not at all. He was Mr. Consistency, really. I mean, with the match ratings that I do, he was, I think he finished, without looking at it, I think he finished third or fourth in the season. But when you compare it to the average team score, he was always just above it. So, you know, he's very steady, rock solid. But the fact is, we picked, you know, what I call the three musketeers, yeah. You know, between us.
We did.
And, you know, they were the linchpin of the team. The one player would probably, maybe two, but Callis, who started the season very well, but people's views of him slightly changed as the season went on. You know, and maybe that's because Ream improved as well. You know, Ream was clearly the most improved player since Christmas. And actually, if you were picking a player of the season since Christmas, you know, he's definitely going to be up there, isn't he? You know, in the top four or five easily. But no, I mean, one of those three midfielders is a player of the season, really. And no, it's not controversial to pick McDonald. It's a steady Eddie, but a very good steady Eddie.
Those are the types of players that I usually gravitate towards, Mike. And I'm just a big fan. I wanted him a year prior when we were trying to get him, and I just thought he was key to everything that we did, along with the other two, like you mentioned, Mike. That's why I voted for Kevin McDonald. All right, let's move on, and we have several topics. Let's see if we can do these two together here. And Yanis, I'll start with you. Which player stood out most as a pleasant surprise for you? Someone that you weren't expecting to play as well as he did. And then who was the biggest disappointment for you?
Pleasant surprise, Scott Malone. I thought Scott Malone was outstanding. And I mean, I've heard of daylight robbery. I've heard of nighttime robbery. I've heard of the great train robbery. But getting Malone for Mr. Richards was a total and utter steal. Malone was a big part. I mean, I love fullbacks that look to attack, look to play overlapping runs, to be as much of an attacking force, because they're difficult to pick up from opposing defenders. So he was a very, very pleasant surprise. The biggest disappointment for me was probably Dennis Odoi. Odoi in the first game of the season against Newcastle. And hey, lest we forget, it was Matt Smith that scored the winner in that game. He did this outrageous piece of skill, which is one of the most audacious bits of skill I've ever seen on a field. It was absolutely brilliant. But he flattered to deceive, and you know, he did get some games in. But the end of the day, Felix was our starting right back, and. I think he'll look back and say he had a disappointing year, and I think he was a little bit of a disappointment. Maybe it was the adjustment to the English game. If you're talking about actual disappointments, I was disappointed when we let Christensen and Woodrow out on loan. Okay. Especially Christensen, for me, I think he would have thrived in a team like this, especially the second half of the season. And I think we could have done with Woodrow as an extra striker, but that's a separate point. But for me, Malone is the biggest pleasant surprise, and the biggest unpleasant, if you want to call it that, I think would be Odoi.
Okay, excellent. Emilio, over to you.
Yeah, I agree with getting in terms of Scott Malone. I think in terms of, Scott Malone and Tim Ream. I've always been quite clear from Tim Ream. I've always said on this show since Christmas that he's probably been our best defender in 2017, and Mike made the point earlier. So that actually, I was pleasantly surprised that he transitioned into the team in the new year and secured his place pretty much for the rest of the season. So, he was written off by most supporters. He was one of Kit Simon's allies, whatever you want to call him. But, the way he turned the season around and kept Madden out the side, that surprised me impressively. And Scott Malone, again, with his goals, assists, actually we got a lot more value for money from Scott Malone than many supporters expected. So I think they're my two. So if I'm cheating, I'm going to put two players I was surprised with. Disappointment. This might be controversial. I'm not trying to let sentiment get in the way here or feelings towards play, but Lucas Piazon, I've said it time and time again, I don't know what his role is and what he offers to the team. And there's all this high expectations, Brazilian background, plays, Chelsea play, et cetera. I've frankly been very disappointed. He's only had 19, 20 appearances, which I know he was injured for a part of the season in the second half, but he disappointed me. I just don't know what his role is. And when you've got reasonably high expectations of a player, I can see why Reading didn't pursue signing him last season, because his goal ratio was very poor at Reading last season. And I'm going to be quite frank, and people might shut me down for this, but I'm going to say Piazon in terms of what the expectation levels were and what his overall contribution and what he actually offers on the pitch. Heart, passion isn't always enough when you're fighting to get promotion. And I think sometimes people, other fans are using the fact that he's very passionate about the club, which I love, but that doesn't always mean you're the best player on the pitch. And I don't actually know what his role is on the pitch. So I'm going to say he's my disappointment, just most disappointing player of the season.
Very interesting. Lucas Piazon. Okay. Mike, over to you. Biggest pleasant surprise and biggest disappointment?
Well, I think, the pleasant surprise was definitely Malone. I don't think there's any way. You could make an argument for Ream. But we saw him last year, and yes, he made loads of mistakes and he came back. But, it's Malone, isn't it? We got rid of Jazz, and then, we did something like one of those older Cold War exchanges on the Severn Bridge where we gave them Jazz and they gave us Malone. And, the Cardiff fans were cheering to the rafters and we were cheering to the rafters as well. Yeah. And, we're thinking we've got the two worst footballers, in the country on our books here. But in the end, he's had an absolutely stellar season, and it's not going to get any better for him. So, he's peaked. I absolutely believe this. He has peaked. We should sell him now, get as much money as we can, because there's no way he's going to repeat. There's no way he's going to repeat this season next year. I mean, if you're going to really be critical of him, I don't think he's a very good defender. When he touches the ball to put a cross in, he make a first touch. You see it every game. I think 9 out of 10 crosses never beat the first person. If he doesn't,
I saw you tweet
think
something
about,
like that out, Mike. Didn't you just tweet that out?
Yesterday. If he doesn't think about it, if the ball just comes to him and he whips it, he's got a really good cross. And it's the same when he has a shot, But when he has to think about anything, I'm going to pick that guy out, he'll never get it past the first man. So, and he's ungainly and all that kind of stuff. So he's been a real pleasant surprise. Emilio might agree with us, actually. He's been a bit of a throwback to the sort of footballers we had in the sort of, in the 90s, mid-90s on the way up.
That's right. Yeah.
And, he would have fitted in with an Adams team or something like that. But, he's definitely one of a kind. But biggest disappointment? Well, personally, there's a few. I thought it was going to be a big year for Christensen, but, but it was explained actually at the FST meeting why LVC and Woodrow went out. Again, that's one of those things where they've been honest, they've said why they've sent him out, but you could argue, I think that was a mistake, whatever. But really, I think it's a toss-up between Sigurdsson and Hozabad. Sigurdsson came in, we broke my rule, which is never buy a player you've never heard of after they've had a good summer tournament. because they always turn out to be rubbish, and that's what happened on this occasion. And Hozabad, who I saw in the league last year, quality player, high scoring midfielder, was brought in to play a specific role, and then we changed formation, and then he struggled to settle in London, and whether he's on a 18-month loan or whatever, hopefully he will come back and knuckle down over the summer and get in the team, because he has something about him. He's a different type of player, and it would be good to see him given another chance. So
I agree, Mike.
So for me, it's Sigurdsson actually. He looks like he's got the attributes, but yeah, just really disappointing. Just God, he just doesn't look at comfortable at all, and nor do the players who play with him.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think he's a bit heavy actually. He looks a bit heavy for his height. I think fitness with him is possibly an issue.
Okay, very good. I'm going to agree with you, Mike. Biggest disappointment is being Sigurdsson, and I'm going to agree with you guys talking about Scott Malone, but Miller makes a good argument for Tim Ream as well, but I'm going to say Scott Malone is the pleasant surprise, definitely. All right, quickly, let's talk about match of the season. There have been some very good matches, so Mike, I'll start with you, your match of the season. Let's do this kind of quickly here.
Okay, my match of the season. Away to Wolves, 4-4 draw. December, it was cold, wet. We were 1-0 down, then we were 3-1 up at half time, and the football I saw in that first half was as good as I've seen for the rest of the season, the Tigernau season since then. It was fluid, it was fast, it was everything you want from football, really. If you're that way inclined, apart from the person who sits behind me who just wants us to lob the ball forward all the time. But it was a great first half. Second half, Lambert as manager changed it for Wolves. They started attacking, got a 3-3, then they went 4-3 up, dead on 90 minutes, and then we got a last second equaliser, and it was just a really good, entertaining game. Lots of yellow cards, lots of challenging on a wet pitch, some good goals. And it ended 4-4. And for me, it was one of the best football games I've seen, entertaining football games I've seen in a long time.
Okay, excellent there, Mike. Giannis, over to you. Match of the season.
Mine's a tie, actually, between both games against Newcastle. I mean, but for different reasons. The first game, we beat the Matt Smith goal. For me, that was because it showed that even from that one game that we played, you could see that our identity had changed as a team. And that obviously Slav and the coaching staff had worked very hard over the summer, and against a team that were lauded that they were lauded to walk the division, and they ended up winning, obviously. But we equipped ourselves very, very well, and I thought that was a big game for us. The second one was obviously the away game, where we went up. I mean, to do the double on Newcastle would have been tough enough, but to go up there and really give them a good buffing was a tremendous achievement. It was Sessegnon's game, don't get me wrong, but it was the type of soccer that we all love to see. And it reminded me very much of a game, I'm going to think, I think it's 1982, I'll be correct to know if I'm wrong, when Malcolm McDonald was manager, and we went up to St. James's Park and won 4-1. I think Gordon Davis got a couple, Ray Houghton, Wilson might have got one, or Lewington, but it was... That game is one of those games that sticks in my memory, and this one did too, because it was attacking, it was flowing, and we made Newcastle look rather daft. So, it's good against arguably the best team in the division. Are the two games that really for me stick out?
Okay, excellent. How about you, Amelia?
I'll do it based on the ones that I did attend and didn't attend. So the ones I didn't attend, I think the Newcastle away, I think like Rihanna said, I think that just, we just played them off the park. 3-5-2 formation, the two goals from Sessegnon could have been the hat-trick as well. There's all that speculation around, did he want to take the penalty, not take the penalty, and all that controversy at the end of the game, which actually scarred the actual fluid display of that game. But from a game that I didn't attend, I think that was my match of the season in terms of what I watched. But from attending again the Fulham Reading game in the end of last year. I think we were just pure class that day. 5-star dominant. We could have scored a dozen goals that day, and we were that good. Reading were awful, but we were the bloody good that day. So that was my pure class, pure 5-star football that day. And you know, there's some good memories. Obviously, met Brendan as well that day. So that was lovely to see him that afternoon. And you know, there's obviously, let's not forget the moment of the season. It's probably got to be Tom Kenny's screamer against Leeds United at injury time.
Great point.
Let's not forget that there's match of season, but you know, I'd classify that screamer from Tom Kearney being the moment of the season. Maybe Dennis Odoi's flick against Newcastle first game of the season might be number two, but I think let's not forget the value of that goal against Leeds and you know the belief it brought to the fans around the grounds and the country. So yeah, those are my matches of the season.
Okay. I've watched all these matches, all the replays, everything, and I'm going to go with the Newcastle away match. I thought that was the best match of the season. My favorite match of the season, I could watch that over and over again. So for me, it's that away match. I thought that was the best victory of the season. That's just my opinion on that. All right, guys, to end the show, we're going to go with a final topic. I was hoping to talk about player departures, but I think what we're going to do on the next show, we'll talk about the departures. The club announced departures. We'll talk about that on the next show. And we'll also be going through all the players and talking about who should stay and who should go, who we want to stay and who we think should go. So we'll do that on the next show. Instead of doing final thoughts from all of you, we're going to just make it one final topic. I'll go to all of you guys. And this is the final topic. Mike, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to put you in the shoes of Tony Khan. What would be your top three objectives to take care of for the new season?
Okay, so you're Tony Khan. We're in the situation we're in. What do you do? You keep Jokanović happy.
Yep.
Give Jokanović whatever he wants. And then finally, you keep Jokanović and keep him happy and give him whatever he wants.
So basically, it's keeping Jokanović happy.
Basically, keep him happy, give him what he wants, and then finally keep him happy again and give him what he wants. You know, it's a bit of a cheat, I know, but this is going to be his test. You know, he talks a good game, Tony, and he does like to talk. And, you know, he took it all over last summer and he's been back and he backed his coach. He got him to sign a new contract, and we all know these rumors happen. It's a phony war, and you know, every day we're going to be people linked with him and players leaving. But players leave, managers leave, you know, new ones come in. But at this moment, we have a coach who can produce the type of football we've seen this last season. And like I say, players will come and go, but coaches like him who can produce that type of stuff, then. You know, there's not many of them. So for me, it's keep him happy and just give him whatever he wants.
Okay. I'm not going to disagree with any of that, Mike. Giannis, how about you?
Number one, get your checkbook out. So it's basically along the lines of what Michael's talked about there, spend the money. Number two, re-sign Scott Parker. Keep him in a coaching capacity, coaching role. He's getting his levels. I think just outstanding person, and I think he could be a tremendous part of the coaching staff moving forward. Number three is going to surprise you, but it's because of my long-held belief that he is not a Premier League striker, but he can score goals at this level. And my number three is find a way to get Dwight Gale in. Simply because I think that with Newcastle going to the Premier League, I think Gale will be expendable. Because our friend Mr. Ashley up there will spend lots of money to keep Rafa happy. And he will look to bring in quality players. And I've always, you know, there are reasons why Gale didn't get as many starts for Palace. It's because he's one of those in-between players. He's too good for the Championship, but not good enough for Premier League. And if you want to get a guaranteed striker that will knock him in, I would say Dwight Gale might well be a man. So number three, so my thing is number one, get your checkbook out. Number two, re-sign Scottie Parker so he can develop as a coach. And number three, find a way to get Dwight Gale in.
Okay, very good there. Emilio, over to you.
I think obviously I think what Mike said goes without saying. You know, keep Slava there. You know, he's changed the identity, the brand of the club, the belief within the club. You know, the football that we played is, you know, probably one of the most attractive football since Tigana's days. And so, first and foremost, if you want to keep the players in the squad that we've got there, then you need the coach who suits that style of football. So I think that goes without saying. Defence is key here. You know, we've proved that we've scored the most goals in the division. Yes, I do believe we do need a central striker, Tammy Abraham. I know he's been linked recently, but we do need somebody who's clinical in front of goal and actually will score you 25, 30 goals. It could be Dwight Gale, it could be a Tammy Abraham. That type of player we definitely need, but you need also a defence. You know, if we look at all those games, those goals that we conceded against Wolves away from home, from 3-1 up to 4-3 down, that game should have been three points in the bag, not only lucky to get away with a draw in the end. So are the fullbacks good enough to play consistently well for 46 games? Mike alluded to Scott Malone might not have a repeat next season of the success he had this year. Fredericks, for all his pace, for all his energy, for all his, you know, one-dimensional type of play going forward, is he good enough for 46 games? Does he assist enough goals? Does he get the ball in often enough in the right areas for Tammy Abrahams and Dwight Gale to score? I don't think he does. So defensively, if you want to get promoted automatically, you can't concede 50-plus goals. So I think there's going to be some significant tightening in that area. And if you can keep the balance offensively, as we have done with a few additions there, then we will be tighter, harder to beat, concede less, do what Brighton have done this season, scrape 2-1 wins at times rather than end up conceding a late goal or only drawing 2-2. So my view is keep Slava, strengthen at probably most levels in defence, and get a central striker.
Okay, excellent there, my friend. All right. My three key objectives, if I was Tony Khan, would be to keep all of your key players. We're talking about, obviously, Tom Kearney. Hopefully, Ryan Sessegnon will sign a contract and we keep all of our key players. That's number one. Number two, identify the positions you need to upgrade and then upgrade all of them. Get all of these positions to where you want them to be, and that's going to lead to number three. Build a squad built for automatic promotion. Not playoffs, automatic promotion. That's either one or two. Going in to that first match, they need a team that is being built not to just get into the playoffs, but to win automatic promotion. So that's the three objectives I would have if I was Tony Khan. All right. It's a great show, guys. You know what? We have a few minutes. Final thoughts. We will go to final thoughts. Mike, final thoughts before we go.
Yeah, we'll talk about players and that in the next show, but it's been good to after a couple of weeks following the playoff game, just to get back to talking about Fulham and what's been a really, really good season. And
it has been.
I think there's been a few fans really upset, but they've got to look at where we started. We started at a very low base level, 14 players come in, and we finished the second half of the season as the best team, and we need to carry that on into next year. But I'm disappointed not to get in the playoff final, but it was a good ride to get to the semi-finals, and whets the appetite for next year.
Okay, very good there, my friend. Emilio?
Yeah, like I said earlier in the show, I'm not overly disheartened that we haven't got promoted. I know we can look forward to 46 exciting games next season. We're strengthening some of those departments that we've talked about, and let's not forget, I think we have punched above our weight to some extent this year. No, none of us on this call, except for you, Russ, expected us to get in the playoffs. We all thought top eight, top nine. We thought 76 points was achievable, which we surpassed. But overall, I said to Tony and Alistair Medhurst last week that overall we're the 26th most successful team in the country. That made them reflect and look at different. Actually, that's quite a proud statistic. It's not like we finished 92nd in the league. We were the 26th most successful team in the country. And we're only 9 points short of automatic promotion next year. So if we had three more wins this season, or next season, certainly, I think the division will be easier to win next year than this year. And we're not a million miles away from where we need to be. So strengthening those departments, secure a few more additional points than you've done this year, convert those draws into wins, those defeats into draws, and those points will start to rack up. And, you know, it's the fact that we've got 80 points with the squad that we've got, with all those additions that Mike mentioned, actually, just a bit more tightening, a bit more reinforcement. 80 points can easily become 90 points. And this time next year, we can be still celebrating automatic promotion. So, yeah, good season. We've got 46 more games to look forward to next year. And as long as we can keep the coach, keep those core nucleus of players, like you said, Russ, and I think there's a bright future for the club. That's what I told the Alistair and Tony Khan. You know, I do firmly believe the financial status of the club is in very good health. And we've got somebody who's keen and very ambitious and wants to take this club to the top level. So we should all be positive about the future.
Okay, not a problem. All right. Giannis, over to you.
I want to wish Huddersfield Town the very best for the playoff final. I hope they stuff the living bejeevers out of Reading. Huddersfield haven't played in the top division for many, many, many years. And so this would be a hell of an achievement for them and the players and their supporters, and I hope it happens for them. And I just want to pay kudos to Slavija, Slav and his coaching staff, because despite the Chris Martin fiasco, which threatened to completely derail this season, and actually even just thinking about it is acutely embarrassing, he did a magnificent job as manager. And you could tell that the players and the fans are drinking the Kool-Aid, but he's astute enough to make the difficult decisions. And I think that with the close season coming up now, obviously they've made some decisions about players they've had to release. I think he's going to look at the players he sent out on loan, and, you know, like the Yozabeds and the Christensens and the Woodrows, and see how that's going to look. And then bring in reinforcements that provide greater strength in breadth as well as depth. And it's really going to be begin and end with Slava. And I really thought he did an outstanding job. And it annoys me that a player, and let's be honest about it, it was also a, you know, we'll call Steve McLaren a scrub. But it was a scrub manager and a player, you know, going on strike in the middle of the season. Despite that, Slava was able to get around that and get through that, which I thought was magnificent. That should never, ever be allowed to happen, where a player decides they're going to, you know, stick the dummy in the mouth and go back into the cot and refuse to play, which is what Martin did. And I think for that, even for that reason alone, I think Slava did a magnificent job.
Okay, excellent there, my friend. Great way to end the show. I'm just going to say real quick, the future is very bright. And you guys have all been talking about the season behind, and it was a wonderful season. I really look forward to the next season. Before we start to look forward to the next season, we will be doing another show where we talk about the players from this season just past and who should stay and who should go. And we'll talk about some of the player departures we just didn't get to in this show. But great show by you guys, but it is time to go. For Giannis, Mike, and Emilio, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you as always for listening to Cottage Talk.